Today is September 9th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit us at macobserver.com/roundup.
Is Apple going entirely 64-bit? Kind of a dumb question, but it is this week's Context Machine Fodder, and you'll see why we're talking about it in a little bit. Let's get right underway.
Now, this isn't the week's top story, but it will probably be related to next week's. Apple Computer sent invitations to members of the media for a special event on September 12th. That's next Tuesday. The event will be at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco at 10 a.m. Pacific time, and the invite says, it's showtime.
Okay, so for the real news, Amazon did indeed beat Apple to market in the movie downloading business, as we discussed last week. Amazon launched its own video download service on Thursday. It's calling it Unbox. The service features DVD quality movies and TV shows from over 30 studios and network partners. Downloaded videos come with a second file optimized for playback on handheld multimedia devices. Unbox uses a progressive download system that lets viewers begin watching shows while they're downloading, instead of making them wait until the entire file has been saved to their hard drive. That means that customers with a typical DSL or cable modem connection can start watching a show within about 5 minutes of purchase. The TV shows, such as just like the ones on iTunes, are priced at $2 each, and most movies are priced between $8 and $15. Movie rentals are also available for $4. A rental is valid for 30 days and automatically disables itself after 24 hours after you watch it.
Now, the service also lets users track their Unbox purchases and download them to an additional computer, which is something iTunes does not do. All of the videos are encoded with Microsoft's Digital Right Management technology, which does not support the Mac and it does not support the iPod. The Unbox Video Player software requires Windows XP, and you can't burn DVD player compatible discs.
Amazon's Unbox will have beaten Apple to the punch by almost a week, at least according to the conventional wisdom. Apple is expected to announce its own movie download service at its Showtime media event next Tuesday.
Now, Apple did do something this week. It added the iMac, it updated the iMac, giving it an Intel Core 2 Duo processor and creating a new 24-inch model. All the specs are online, so we're not going to bother you with those details.
So there's not too much actual information in this bit of news, this story about the iMacs, but there is plenty of context machine fodder here because the Core 2 Duo is a 64-bit processor. Now, why anyone would care about that, we'll get into that in the context machine in just a moment.
And in addition to new iMac models, Apple also updated the Mac Mini on Wednesday. The new Mac Mini gives up its single-core processor in the entry-level model for a Core Duo chip without increasing the price. And keep in mind that's a Core Duo, not the Core 2 Duo in the updated iMacs.
There's no real context machine fodder in this story, but I did want to do a mainstream drive-by here. Intel on Tuesday announced that it will cut 10,500 jobs over the next year in response to competitive gains made by rival AMD. The layoffs are about 10% of its workforce and will save the company around $5 billion U.S. But the Wall Street Journal gets spanked once, crisply, for reporting last week that Intel might cut as many as 20,000 jobs. Seriously, 20% of the company's workforce. I'm inclined to think that whoever leaked that figure wanted to lower expectations ahead of the week's announcement, and the Journal took the bait. So that's all that's about.
One other cool story from the week. Apple, in March, filed a patent for a multifunction handheld device. The patent was published by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office on Thursday. The patent explains how users would be able to switch between different user interfaces for functions like a PDA, a cell phone, games, GPS, a music device, and video. Of course, there's no guarantee that Apple will ever produce a multifunctional device with any of these options.
Now, as regular listeners of the Roundup will know, I tend to get most giddy when the analysts jump on stories like this one, and American technology research analyst Shaw Wu reviewed Apple's patent filing. Now, this is extremely unusual for an analyst to go. We've talked on the show about how analysts have gotten in the speculation game. It's very unusual. I've never seen an analyst comment on a patent filing from a company. But he was saying that it is likely that this patent is the fundamental basis in technology behind Apple's cell phone efforts. Thank you, Mr. Wu. To his credit, he did say that if Apple gains 1% of the cell phone market, that could translate into an additional $2 billion U.S. in revenue for the company. Based on Apple's current track record, Mr. Wu expects that that is a real possibility. And for the record, Apple's stock ended the week up at $72.52 a share on preemptive enthusiasms over next week's product announcements. So we're going to get into the context machine. There was some other stuff going on here, but really the most interesting story to me this week, Jeff, is the story about the Core 2 Duo processors and iMacs. So I want to spend our time with that, even though it's a very simple news story. It's just a speed bump of a computer. First of all, this seems like a pretty swift upgrade cycle, doesn't it? I mean, the Intel Macs were only released last January.
That's true. This is a pretty fast product cycle upgrade. However, I think that this product upgrade happened when it did, not by chance, but because we have more announcements from Apple on Tuesday. So I think what just happened is going to play very well into what's about to be announced.
Now, my opinion is that the Core 2 Duo processors are the story here because they're 64-bit. So before we dive into this, can you just give us the elevator speech on what 64-bit processors do and why they're different from the 32-bit processors that we've been dealing with for the last 15 years?
Well, one of the big things that you get with the 64-bit processor is the ability to count higher. I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to. You can count higher. When you can count higher, you can do a lot more mathematically on your computer. Now, for the average user, what that's going to come down to is the ability to put a lot more RAM into your machine. And that's going to be a key aspect coming down the road, where we are going to have a lot more multimedia functions going on with the machines. And because of that, we're going to need a lot more memory to handle all of those processes. That's going to be the big thing for most people, I think.
And I think it is worth stressing the point that you just made. The average user, if they say, well, the computer can count higher, I would think that the average computer user would say, well, how high do I need to be able to count? And the biggest number that the average user has is the amount of memory that they address. And it turns out the 32-bit ceiling is what? It's 4 gigabytes, right? It can count. The computer can count as high as it's basically 4 giga is billion, right?
Right.
And so it can count that high. And if you put more memory in there, the computer doesn't know how to address it. It doesn't know how to say, that's the memory that I want to assign data to, because it can't count that high. So that is something that average users will make use of in the future. You're saying we might need, on average, more than 4 gigabytes in our computers.
Oh, absolutely. And that's going to be something that I think people see sooner as opposed to later. Because once you really start playing with a lot of multimedia things, and by multimedia, I'm focusing mostly on video. You need to have a lot of memory to be able to render out the images on screen in real time the way people expect to see them. So think DVD quality products on your screen. And right now, if you take a DVD and put it in your computer, the rendering part is already handled, so you don't need to have as much memory to display the image. But when you get it as a stream, your computer is going to have to handle part of that process itself. And the more memory you have, the more of the video you can store in real time, which means things can go a lot faster, which means that you don't have jumpy and choppy images, you don't have artifacts showing. These are all things that are going to be very, very important in the coming years.
All right. Now, another thing that's kind of important to point out here, the G5s were the 64-bit processors, you know, back in the old days when PowerPC was the big thing, the old days, 6 months ago.
Right.
So those were the Those were the 64-bit processors in the PowerPC days. Those never made it into a laptop, and that's been talked about a lot, how they ran too hot and used up too much power. Should we expect that the Core 2 Duo is going to end up in a laptop?
We should expect to see, if it's not the Core 2 Duo, some version of the processor that's optimized for portable computing. So the short answer is yes, we will see a 64-bit processor in our laptops. And if my crystal ball worked, I would say that we are going to see that 64-bit processor sooner as opposed to later. And it would not surprise me to see a 64-bit MacBook Pro before Macworld.
All right. Now,
how's that for a big statement?
Yeah, exactly. That is actually kind of a whopper. And I think a lot of people who get into the speculation game have come to see the fall as the iPod release time. Because of the run-up to the Christmas buying season, and iPods are a big Christmas gift. And then January, Macworld is the big Mac event when new Macs are released. So it will be interesting to see if that happens. If they just treat it as speed bumps, say, hey, we threw in these new processors and don't make a big deal out of it. They haven't been making a big deal out of this iMac upgrade, right?
No, they haven't. And that actually really surprises me. Based on what they gave us on Wednesday, to me, that was enough to warrant a media event in and of itself, because that was really a big, big thing. And when Apple just said, oh, by the way, here's some faster iMacs for you, I was just stunned with that. I could not believe that's how they announced what they dropped on the market. I mean, they took a consumer machine and built-in features that other companies only put on their high-end Pro machines, really. Now, of course, some people are going to email in and say, oh, but what about the video card and all that? I'll discount that part. Let's just talk about the processor part. What they did with that processor, I mean, they really put in a Pro-level architecture into this consumer machine. And then giving us the 24-inch display, okay, well, what that tells me is Apple is ready to take the iMac and turn it into a home entertainment center, all in one device. And that's a huge thing right there. I mean, this tells me Apple is ready to come in guns blazing into the digital home entertainment market.
All right. Now, this is a very interesting idea. What it sounds like what you're saying is Apple is going to make the case, hey, you can buy either a Mac Mini, if you just want to plug it into your big old 50-inch plasma deal, and you can use your Mac Mini to run things like Front Row or whatever else. Or if you just want, you know, a piddly 24-inch TV, just buy an iMac, have that be both your computer and your TV, and run everything off of that.
Sure. And it's not that expensive to add on like a iTV or Miglia TV tuner to your computer. It just plugs right into USB. So there you go. You have the whole setup plus your Front Row and remote and all of that, and you're good to go. Now, one thing that goes along with this is Apple has done something now that I haven't seen them do before, which is they gave us an iMac that has a bigger display than you can get in the standalone cinema display product line. And that's the 24-inch display. Right now, we have the 17, 20, and 30-inch displays. And in the iMac, we have 17, 20, and 24. So now we have this open space in the cinema display line that the iMac is filling. And I think that I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say on Tuesday, Apple's going to give us a 24-inch cinema display also.
Fair enough. Now, the other, I do want to make one correction. I think that the cinema display lineup is actually 2023.
Thank you.
But it's definitely that is kind of unusual to see them release a screen. It means that they're not being manufactured by the same people. I mean, that's the thing that's weird. There's a change in manufacturer. It's a different process where they said, hey, we're just going to build a totally different screen rather than take the same technology in our 23-inch guy, throw it into an iMac. But that is interesting.
Yes, and thank you for correcting me on that. I was actually seeing the correct numbers in my head, but apparently I have a short circuit in my mouth.
All right. Now, I want to talk about the other half of this that was really interesting to me. You've been talking about the home entertainment idea. The thing that I saw You know, they didn't make a big deal out of the 64-bit iMac, right? 64-bit is something that we've always thought of as a pro-level thing. Now it's in a consumer computer. We're going to see it in laptops in the next little while. Apple is making a bit of a big deal when you look at their propaganda online about Leopard, about OS 10.5. They're saying it's going to be fully 64-bit. All of the application frameworks are going to be 64-bit. So is it possible? I mean, I'm wondering how to ask this question in the most useful way, but how big of a deal would it be to have all Macs running 64-bit versus all Macs running 64-bit with a fully 64-bit OS?
Actually, that's going to be a really big thing. And that'll be a big thing initially for the pro-level user, because they're going to want to have a machine with an operating system that are optimized to work together very efficiently and take advantage of the additional memory, the additional processing power, all the things that go along with having the 64-bit processor. So when Apple comes out the chute in spring with Leopard, OS 10.5, we're going to have something on the Apple side that Microsoft can't match, which is we're going to have a system where across the board you can be 64-bit. And Microsoft can't match that because Vista is going to have the 64-bit and 32-bit versions. It's crazy. There's like 11 different versions of Windows depending on what type of hardware it's going to run on. And what Apple's going to give us is a 64-bit architecture with a 64-bit operating system. And then they're going to say, oh, and by the way, for those of you that aren't ready to upgrade yet, don't worry. We wrote it so it can run on a 32-bit system also.
And the thing that's really interesting about this to me is, like you said, they haven't made a big deal out of the consumer 64-bit iMac. Because right now, the operating system isn't 64-bit, so in a sense, anyone could say, well, hey, Intel is making the processors. Those are commodity parts. Dell can use them. HP can use them. But the real key here, the marketing opportunity, is when Apple releases its fully 64-bit OS 10.5, it can say to the world, hey, by the way, our entire computer lineup was 64-bit, you know, halfway through this season, and now we have the OS to run on it. So check this out.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. And when Leopard hits store shelves, they're going to be able to say, oh, and by the way, for the last 6 months or whatever, we've been selling you computers that are totally optimized for this brand new operating system, and look at the killer things it can do that we just didn't tell you about back at the Worldwide Developer Conference.
Fair enough. Now, let's divert to this other topic that we just brushed by at the beginning of the show. Amazon is now in the movie download business. They did beat Apple to market. We talked about whether or not that has any ramifications before. But this is the only question that I think is really relevant this week. What happens to Apple if they don't release a movie download service on Tuesday?
I think what happens to Apple is that people will start dumping stock in a fast, big way because they'll be afraid that Apple's now behind the curve. So, but if Apple doesn't release this new video service, I think there's also a lot of people that will be disillusioned and unhappy, and they're going to think that Apple can't pull this one off. And so there's a lot of people that will lose faith in the company. Now, I think the likelihood of that happening is between slim and none, somewhere right in there.
You're one of those people who would just completely, your faith would be shattered.
My faith wouldn't be shattered, but I would be bewildered. I think right. That's the appropriate word, bewildered. And if you look at everything they've done and the timing of everything else that's happening, to not announce a video download service on Tuesday would be the big news, bigger than anything else. And if you look at the invitation they sent out to the media, and there's a picture of it on Mac Observer, the graphic is the Apple logo being illuminated with Klieg lights. Now, if that doesn't say movies to you, and then to add the words, it's Showtime.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Klieg lights, by the way, are those things like in the 20th Century Fox logo that are panning the sky, those big bright searchlights.
That, yes, those are Klieg lights. And yeah, so you see those at movie openings, and it's something that's associated very closely with the movie industry. And then adding the words, it's showtime. Okay, anyone that's followed even half of this would look at that and go, well, they're announcing a movie service.
Well, and of course, what we'll do, we'll set aside the rest of this story until next week, because the real question is, what happens when you sit down and compare these two services, the Unbox Amazon service and the iTunes Apple service? And so we'll sit down and spend some time with that next week, assuming that this happens, which apparently we are assuming.
That's my assumption. And yeah, and I've been following a little bit about what's going on with the Amazon service, so we can do a comparison between what I've seen so far and my limited experience with Amazon's Unbox and whatever Apple announces.
Fair enough. And that'll have to be the last word. Oh, no, there was one other thing I wanted to ask you about, this patent filing, the multifunction device, the idea of having a single device, and then you push a button or you do something to switch. It's as though you have one box and you hit a button and it turns from being an iPod into a cell phone, and then you hit another button and it turns from being a cell phone into a PDA, essentially saying, rather than try and design an interface for all of these things, let's design each interface separately so that they work and then make it easy to switch from the other. Any reaction to that?
Well, when I looked at the patent information, one of the things that went through my head was, well, duh. I mean, that totally makes sense. Why should you do what every company is doing right now? Look at your cell phone. How good is that interface? And if anyone tells you the interface is innovative and fantastic, they're smoking crack or they're lying. I mean, that's all there is to it. There is no good cell phone interface. So part of that's because you have people that don't know how to design an interface doing this. And the other part is they're trying to make a one interface fits all type thing. And it looks to me like Apple is going a different route, which is, let's make the interface that fits the function. And if we have to make five different interfaces, so be it. And that totally makes sense to me. Create an interface that does what you need it to do, instead of making a device do what the interface is trying to fit.
And presumably part of the issue here is that people don't tend to use all of those devices at once. The idea is that, you know, when you're on the bus, you want your iPod. When you're sitting in a meeting, you want your PDA. When you're walking down the street, you want your cell phone. And so you don't need them all. You don't need all those functions sitting in front of you in the same moment.
Exactly. And if I'm using my cell phone, like when I look at the combination devices where you can have a music player and your cell phone together, that to me looks like one of the most annoying things you could possibly do. Because if I'm listening to my music and my phone rings, if I'm not going to answer the phone, I don't want my music to stop. But that's typically what happens. It shuts off the music so that you can do the whole phone thing. And then when the phone thing is done, then it goes back to the music. I would rather have a device, if it's going to be convergent like that, where I have control over what it's going to do at any given time. And I would venture to say that if Apple is making such a device, that's how it will work.
Fair enough. And that will have to be the final word. If you have questions, thoughts about the news, you can send them, as usual, to roundup@macobserver.com.
Okay, and I think it's time to hit our weekly product roundup.
CoinGo Software has released version 1.0 of Data Guardian, an application for storing passwords, credit cards, numbers, addresses, notes, contact information, and anything else that the user wants to keep safe from prying eyes. It integrates with Keychain for autofilling its fields. Pricing is $20.
LaCie on Tuesday introduced a new line of safe desktop and mobile hard drives, which include an embedded sensor that the user swipes with his finger to lock or unlock the drive. They also have an internal drive lock on the firmware, preventing someone from removing the drive from the case and plugging it into another computer. Safe hard drives come with LaCie one-click backup software, as well as Silverkeeper backup software, and they're both desktop and there are both desktop and mobile versions in capacities ranging from 40 to 500 gigabytes, and prices range from $100 to $350.
Big Fish Games has released Atlantis Sky Patrol, an action puzzle game in the mold of games like Luxor. Atlantis Sky Patrol also features mini games that appear between levels. Pricing is $20.
Pangea Software announced Pangea Arcade, a collection of three action arcade games, on Friday. The game sets include Nucleus, Warheads, and Firefall, which are all based on classic arcade games and can even be played in 3D if you have red cyan glasses. Pangea Arcade will be available this fall for $20.
Meglia announced the immediate availability of the wireless Dialog Phone on Tuesday. The Dialog Phone is Skype and iChat AV compatible and connects to your Mac via a wireless USB adapter. It costs $80.
And NEC on Wednesday introduced its latest Multi-Sync 5 Series display, a 19-inch widescreen model with integrated speakers and a 1440 by 900 resolution for $285. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to Weekly Roundup.
Our content is written by the fine staff of the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. And remember, the Podcast Expo is coming up at the end of the month. I'm going to be there. Let me know if you will. That's all I got.
And thank you for the review ideas you've sent in to us so far. Please send in more so that we can be sure to cover the products that you're most interested in. And you can send your ideas to roundup@macobserver.com. And stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we will see you online.
Now, one other cool story from the week. Apple in March filed in... Oh, Christ. I think I had a hairball. Sorry about that. All right, I'll try that again. right after I take a drink to, you know, like, wash that hairball down.
Right.
Okay, I'll try again.